Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores on 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Katie Service, and this is a recap of all of the news from the University of Connecticut from this past week. This broadcast is in collaboration with UConn's newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run television station, UCTV. Husky Nation News is a broadcast that informs the public about recent news and events within and around the UConn area. It will include original reports from the WHUS News Committee, The Daily Campus, and news packages from UCTV. We will also be discussing local and global news, what events are coming up in the Storrs Mansfield area, and we'll provide some insight on UConn's fall athletic teams. Now, to get into it this morning, we're going to talk a bit about elections. Election Day is coming up. It's on Tuesday, November 4th, and the Mansfield town elections are happening. So early voting has been open for the past 2 weeks, and it will be available until Sunday. If you are a Mansfield resident or voting in the town of Mansfield for this election year, you can vote early in the council chambers in Town Hall, which is located on 4 South Eagleville Road, or at the UConn Bookstore, which is located on 2075 Hillside Road. This is going to be available until Sunday from the hours of 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Now, on Tuesday, on Election Day, the polls are going to be open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., and if you are unaware of your voting location, you can search up your voter registration location from the Office of the Secretary of State's website or on the Mansfield Town website. Now, who is up for re-election or election? For this election round here in Mansfield, you will be able to vote for up to 6 members on the town council, up to 2 members on the Board of Education, and 1 for the Board of Education vacancy, up to 2 for the Board of Assessment Appeals, up to 2 for the Planning and Zoning Commission, up to 2 for Planning and Zoning Commission alternate, up to 2 for the Zoning Board of Appeals, and you can vote for 2 as well for the alternate position. And you will also have the opportunity to vote for 2, up to 2, for the Regional Board of Education. Now, that's all that I have, and I'm going to send it right over to Rhea Kowalski, who will be telling us a bit about what's going on in the local area. Rhea, what is going on?
Thank you, Katie. Happy Halloween, everyone. I hope you all have a fun and especially safe and spooky evening. Our first story is coming from the town of Mansfield, who has just earned a gold certification from Sustainable CT. Sustainable CT is a statewide initiative that recognizes municipals who have implemented practices that make communities more resilient, inclusive, and environmentally responsible. As far as environmental sustainability, the town of Mansfield has several initiatives that include stewardship and energy efficiency. The town's more notable accomplishment included the state's first ever net zero construction public school, which is Mansfield Elementary, who produces as much energy as it consumes. The town indicated their pride for the award was recognized for it earlier this week during Sustainable CT's annual award ceremony. And another town over, Willimantic, is going to be opening a new homeless shelter. This story comes from the Daily Campus writer Juliana Asis. The shelter has 6,200 square feet that welcomes all unhoused adults. The shelter also features double occupancy rooms with their own bathroom and shower, according to the executive director, Avery Lenhart. Another addition to the space is the Technology Resource Center for people to be able to apply for jobs, documents, and build digital skills. The shelter is located across the street from Generations Family Health Center and adjacent to the Wyndham Hospital within walking distance of the Wyndham Interfaith Ministry and Covenant Soup Kitchen. The last story this week is another one out of the Daily Campus from Kevin Gwennon, covering the Board of Trustees meeting that happened this past week on Wednesday. During the Board of Trustees meeting, Marlinda Gander spoke on behalf of Avery Point, claiming that low admissions were a result of the lack of housing at the Avery Point campus. It was mentioned that back in June, a $3 million budget would be set aside for the Avery Point housing, but voting on this budget was postponed until a full strategic plan was formed, according to the Connecticut Mirror. During this meeting, there was a bit of confusion regarding a budget presentation where a board member questioned the $20 million that would be used, that would be dedicated to the next phase of the Avery Point campus updates. Regardless of this confusion, the budget disputes, Gandara continued to put emphasis on the fact that there was, if there was not a few million dollars and a multi-year commitment to Avery Point, that the campus would not survive. The reserved date to further discuss the regional campus issue is November 19th in the North Reading Room of Wilbur Cross, with a time yet to be disclosed. That's all I have for local news. Back to you, Katie.
Thank you so much, Rhea. And it's so interesting to hear about Avery Point. I think that campus has been pretty prevalent in the UConn news space recently, so I'm interested to see how that story progresses. Now, we're going to get into our state and global news report. Some big news from Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont this week. A press release from Monday announced that Lamont is allocating $3 million in emergency state funding to the nonprofit organization Connecticut Food Share. This funding is set to aid residents who are expecting to lose food stamp benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP, during this federal government shutdown. This action comes following the Trump administration's memo from Friday that says they will not be utilizing its $6 billion contingency fund to support the SNAP program or reimburse states who cover the costs of this program during the shutdown. This memo also states that effective on November 1st, which happens to be tomorrow, new SNAP benefits will not be distributed, as stated in the press release from Lamont's office. Residents who have unused benefits on their EBT cards will be able to access those funds. However, additional funds will not be given in November. Quote, Connecticut families should not go hungry because of Washington's dysfunction, Governor Ned Lamont said in the press release. While this $3 million in emergency funding will not fill the entire gap left by the federal government, it represents our state's commitment to supporting our neighbors during this crisis. We are stepping up because Connecticut takes care of its own, and we will continue working to support our residents until this federal shutdown is resolved, end quote. This emergency funding from the state will support Connecticut Food Share's efforts to combat food insecurity, and SNAP is distributed by the Connecticut Department of Social Services. For more information on receiving food assistance from Connecticut Food Share, you can visit www.ctfoodshare.com. Now, in other news, the lawsuit between Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Tylenol has continued. Paxton said the companies behind Tylenol have deceptively marketed the pain reliever to pregnant mothers. These companies include Johnson & Johnson and Kenvue. As of now, a claim that acetaminophen increases the risk of autism and other disorders through this lawsuit have not yet been proven. This lawsuit alleges that the companies violated Texas consumer protection laws, that Tylenol is deceptively marketed to be the only safe painkiller for pregnant women. Statements about acetaminophen were made by Kenvue, stating that it is the safest pain reliever option for pregnant women. The lawsuit filed in state court in rural Panola County asked for a jury trial in the Republican-leaning county of about 23,000 in East Texas, as reported by the Associated Press. The state of Texas is asking the court to order both companies to pay the state $10,000 per Deceptive Trade Practices Consumer Protection Act violation. Texas is also asking the court to order the companies to dispose of their marketing materials that promote Tylenol to pregnant women and children, and do not disclose that it could cause autism or other disorders. Based on the data from various research studies, there is currently no connection between Tylenol and neurological disorders. Now, we're going to throw it over to Vinny Carbone, our sports director. Vinny, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for Halloween this weekend. Guess what
I was just going to ask you, what are you going to be for Halloween?
You know the Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Yes.
I'm going to be Theodore with my friends.
Who's Simon and who's
one of my
Alvin?
Friends is Alvin, one of my friends is Simon, and then I'm Theodore. I don't think you know them.
He strikes me as an Alvin.
I know, yeah. but my other friend is taller,
okay.
Slightly taller, and like.
So you're just the shortest
one. He's kind of the main character. He's kind of the main character.
Okay.
All right.
Shout out, Jake.
All right. Well, okay. Thanks, Vinny.
Let's get into soccer. Welcome back to Carbone's Court. I'm your host, Vinny Carbone. And we have women's soccer, men's soccer, and football to talk about. Let's get right into it. Why are we all still laughing? UConn women's soccer got one win this past week, ending the regular season at 11-3-3, a great finish to the season. What seemed like a close game based on the scoreboard deceived the actual result, which was a dominating performance from the Huskies. Huskies won the shots on goal battle in this game 13-1 and didn't even allow a corner kick. Freshman goalie Ava Yama secured her 10th shutout of the season and was the Huskies' 11th shutout as a team. Naya Osio finished the end of the regular season strong, notching her second goal of the year. The Huskies now move on to Big East tournament play in Boyds, Maryland. Depending on what place these other teams finish in, they either play Georgetown or Xavier next Thursday. And we know from last year what happened in those games. UConn beat both of them to win the Big East tournament championship. So we're looking forward to that. Now on to men's soccer. They tied their last game of in this last week. It was a scoreless match versus Providence in Rhode Island. Goalie Kyle Durham really showed out in his true potential in this game, making 6 saves and racking up his 7th clean sheet of the season. The Huskies now set at 8-3-4 on the season, and they look to take on Butler at home tomorrow night, and that will be the men's soccer senior night. Now over to football. The UConn football team unfortunately fell to the Rice Owls in their 3rd overtime loss of the season and their 1st double overtime finish this year. They were on a 4-game win streak until it was snapped last Saturday. Quarterback Joe Fignano threw for 344 yards and converted on 3 touchdown passes. Running back Cam Edwards had 59 rushing yards on 16 carries and scored a touchdown in overtime. But it just wasn't enough. Skylar Bell did more of the usual with a career-high 158 receiving yards. He is still proving that he is one of the best wide receivers in all of college football. The teams went back and forth in overtime where Rice scored first and Edwards tied the game at 31. UConn's kicker Chris Freeman hit a 41-yard field goal to give UConn the lead in overtime, but it was only to be countered by a 23-yard touchdown run, which gave Rice the 37-34 win. UConn is home for the next 3 games and will play UAB tomorrow at home. Now on to the trivia segment. We were talking about it a little bit before this, but let me get the last week's question out of the way. It was, what year did Big East Media Day originate? The correct answer to that question was 1979. I don't know how anyone would have known that, but that was about like 46 years ago. 46 or 47 years ago. This week, our question is going to be about the song Ghostbusters, which we just played. What artist recorded the song Ghostbusters? Once again, what artist recorded the song Ghostbusters? I know some people in here know the answer, but don't say it. And you need to check back next week to get that answer. Katie, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Vinny. I was going to say, my guess for last week's question was going to be 1986, so I wasn't too far off.
Yeah, but you were still wrong.
Yes, that is true. I was still incorrect, but I wasn't that far off.
Why 1986?
I don't know, just a random number. I feel like it hasn't been around. It's like a kind like newer, but not. I don't know. That's just my random guess. Anyway, we're gonna get into our interview segment today. We are so excited to have two of our favorite guests back in studio with us. We haven't seen them in a little bit because Rhea and I haven't been here and all the craziness of the past few weeks and midterms and everything, but I am so happy to introduce Billy and Andy from USG. How are you guys doing?
We're so good. We're so glad to be back.
Yes. No, thank you so much for having us.
Yes, of course. We are so excited to have you guys back. And we have a lot to catch up on. There has been a lot of news about USG. We have 2 different topics we want to touch on. One about the new legal service program, which Andy, I think you could touch on. And Billy, the Tier 2 funding form is now closed. So we're going to start off with Andy. Can you tell us a bit about this new legal service program? Because it came out in a story from the Daily Campus, I think, a day or two ago. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. No, I'd be happy to. And I think the legal service is part of our broader goal of trying to create both short-term solutions and also long-term solutions to the problems that we're facing. And so right now, I think that there's been a really strong need for a lot of international students, particularly to get a lot of legal services for immigration, with visas changing and all that kind of stuff. And so with USG, I thought one of the most impactful ways for us to spend our student fees or our dollars would be creating something that would be creating tangible change in student lives. And this is something that the university has explicitly said back in April that they can't fund because they can't use public dollars for private benefit. And so we think that as USG, we have a little bit more flexibility in that area. And so we're currently seeing and working with the University General Counsel to see if we have the ability to make this happen, because there's a variety of restrictions that we kind of need to go through when we're using student fees for legal services. One of them is the fact that we need to make sure that our student fees are accessible to everyone. And so we're doing these legal services in a way that everyone can access it and figure out how that would work. And then we also have this other, and that I think the general counsel of the university is looking at, is like, can we use legal fees in this way on a broader, I think, Connecticut scale? Because I think there's some other state laws I'm sure that they have to check in with and see if that this is actually feasible in the first place. But while the general counsel is doing that, we're trying to figure out how we can structure this so that it's most beneficial to students and figure out how we can model this legal service framework, right? Because I think what we're envisioning is that we contract with a firm gives us an attorney, or we work with an attorney, an attorney would work on a student's case or a variety of students' cases and provide legal services in that manner. Because I think the difficulty that we're running into is that the need for legal services is either very high or very low. And so it's very hard to get a very accurate idea of how much legal services we need. And also because legal services, in a way, are something that is often very private, whether it's regarding housing, whether it's regarding your immigration status, whether it's regarding even your own, for example, your own civil disputes or your own life. Like, there are so many different reasons that people would need legal services that aren't very clearly disclosed. And so currently we're just trying to figure out, one, how do we make a legal services framework that is beneficial for students? How do we make it work within the framework of the Connecticut laws, our student fee restrictions? And also, how do we make it work so that actually students can actually get something beneficial from it, right? Because I think we're constricted in a way of like what we can actually make, but we need to make sure that even if we can make something within these restrictions, we need to make sure that it's actually beneficial to the students that are receiving them. Right. And so currently we're in the process of working with UConn's procurement team and UConn's student activities and trying to draft some sort of request for proposal. And we're going to send that out, and hopefully law firms will be able to apply and we'll be able to see what people have to offer. And I'm hoping that it'll have something to, and I'm hoping it'll launch in the spring, but it might be taking a little bit longer than that. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that at least we'll have a framework for future USGs to do this project or this program.
Yeah. So from the information, from my understanding and the information that I've read, USG already has immigrant-based support, right? And that is a 30-minute consultation, right, with a legal representative? Correct me if I'm wrong here.
I don't know if USG itself provides any legal representation, but I think what it does is that it gives a lot of resources to other avenues. Because I think we're in a world where there's a lot of people that are willing to, because I think something that we found when we were looking for immigration services particularly is that there's a lot of attorneys and people that are willing to provide free pro bono services. And so that manner, I was realizing that our job isn't so much as to kind of replicate what's already being done, but instead to direct people to where they need to go. And it's also one of those cases where UConn already has a Center for International Scholars and Students that I think also does a really great job of providing students with legal support, whether it's your undocumented or international student. And I think that where USG can kind of slot in is that we don't need to have legal services be like a one-time thing just because of the moment we're living in, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think we need to just have legal services just because there's a lot of immigration issues and international students issues and visas issues that are going on right now. I think that legal services are something that are beneficial regardless of the time period. And so I think right now the big need for legal services is due to immigration, but I also want to make sure that we're able to do legal services because of all those other areas that are necessary. Because I think that I was just talking to my other friend the other day, and they were talking about how they're living off campus, and they are there when students living off campus, it's their first time with a landlord, and they're leaning over their lease, and they might miss things. And so they were telling me about how they got some sort of $700 fine that they didn't know about, right? And for them, it was either a decision of either they can hire an attorney to fight that or just pay the upfront cost, right? And it doesn't make sense for them to hire an attorney for a $700 fine when it probably costs a much, much more than that $700. And so they just pay the $700 fine, right? And so I was thinking that even as more and more students live off campus, there's going to be more and more tension within the off-campus students, but also their landlords, and making sure that students have the adequate support to just not be overcharged and almost stolen from when they live off campus. Because for a lot of people, and for me, right, it's my first time living off campus, having a lease, reading through it, and making sure that I guess my housing situation is okay. Yeah.
So kind of to build off of what you were just sharing a bit, with creating this, you know, these consistent services for students to access and to just utilize through USG, like, as a connection, what do you think the like area will be, you know what I mean? So like in the state of Connecticut, there's so many different lawyers out there, attorneys, whoever. And if you're looking for services, what is your like radius of who you're looking to have support these students? Like, are you primarily connecting with people in Hartford? Are you connecting with people throughout the entire state?
Yeah.
What is that looking like?
Yeah, and I think that we're also, because it's difficult right now, because we're trying to gauge as well, like, student interested in the type of services, right? Because I think there are so many legal services that you can get support for. But I also think this is one of those cases where it's difficult to get a really accurate number, a really accurate idea of what students really want within these legal services, right? And so what I think we're hoping to do is we're hoping to contract with some sort of firm that is able to provide a variety of sources. So I know that there's something like Connecticut Legal Services that provides legal services for almost like every kind of issue. And so whether or not And so whether or not there are other firms out there, we're hoping that we can contract with a firm that can do a variety of issues so that we can make sure that students are supported in all cases, even if it's not the one that they explicitly need, right? Because I think also it's one of those things where students don't realize what legal services they need before they actually are in that situation. And so it's difficult to kind of proactively try and gauge what they want or what they might need.
Yeah.
And just to provide some background on like the purchasing side of things, and Andy can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, myself and my office, we work with purchasing to do requests for proposals all the time for club coaches. What's nice about the RFP process is that you know, when Andy and his team go to kind of create this request for proposal, he's going to create a list of criteria and an explanation of what we're looking for on our end of things. And then what's nice is that it kind of gets sent out to really anybody. It'll be posted on the UConn, you know, purchasing website. And what's nice is that, you know, whichever legal services are provided or whoever applies, whichever company applies, you know, they're going to go ahead and answer those questions. They're going to look at the criteria and they're going to try to meet the expectations that we've set via the RFP. But then we get to evaluate those I guess applications, you could say it's a really nice process. It's sort of like a job application, so we can almost guarantee that we're going to get number one, the best option of all the applicants, but also we can really focus what we're looking for really nicely. So
yeah, that's great. Now, Billy, I want to transition a bit to you and talk a bit about the USG Tier 2 funding. I know that there's been a lot that happens there. I know that a lot of people don't always understand the logistical side of things, and the funding form just closed. So I wanted to ask if you can share a little bit about that and why it is now closed for the semester.
Yeah, so Ahmad and I, who's our funding director, had kind of made the decision way back in the beginning of the semester. You know, issues with funding in the past several years have been primarily because of efficiency. And that's not the fault of the staff. That's staff time versus the amount of requests in the system at one time. You know, we've had very efficient staffs in previous years. The problem is that the form never stopped. So, you know, you would go on break, or you would, you know, students would have midterms or whatnot. And the you know, what happens is when you submit a request, it goes into one of our action lists. And then the staff evaluates those requests during staff time in office hours and whatnot. We don't really have staff work from home. So if staff is busy or if there's a huge volume of requests in the system, there's only so many people on our staff that can get to them. And that's a problem for our staff, but that's also a problem for the clubs that are requesting funds. So we've designed this to be, you know, we closed the form on October 28th at midnight. That is 6 weeks out from the end of the semester. We have a 6 week advance policy. We ask that you, you know, request funds 6 weeks in advance. We understand that there's extenuating circumstances, and we have ways to remedy that. But generally, it's the 6 week deadline. So we had done the math. We figured out what was the date 6 weeks before the end of the semester. That was going to be our form closure date, so that we could have time to empty out the system, get rid of all the fall semester submissions, clear them out, pay for them, et cetera, so that we could be geared up to go for the spring semester. So we sent out a couple of emails. We posted on the Instagram over and over again. We let people know, tried to get the word out. And it did work. We got a huge volume of requests sort of like right in that last week. And we were really happy with that. And in that vein, we managed to actually kind of allocate enough money for spring.
That's great.
We didn't spend too much for fall, so I feel really good about that. And we had advertised, too, that, you know, this was just a closure for fall semester submissions. We're going to be reopening again December 9th, which is 6 weeks before the start of the spring semester.
Okay.
So if clubs have an event they want to do first week back for classes in January, they can do that with the form opening December 9th. So
that's great.
Yeah.
I'm happy to hear that you guys are handling everything as efficiently as possible, but also making sure that all the clubs are able to receive the funding that they may need. Because I know we've talked in the past about how there has been a lot of struggles when it comes to allocating this money and making sure that all these clubs feel represented and making sure that you guys also have funding for the spring semester. So how has it been like working with your staff team to ensure that that was going to happen this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say this. I'm so unbelievably pleased with the staff that we have this year. Ahmad is an incredible funding director, and our staff, the funding staff, is excellent. They're super knowledgeable. They understand the policies. They work diligently, and they're just a great group of students. I think that we have done a really good job this year of kind of maintaining good relationships with clubs, even when things kind of get sticky, or we mm-hmm. make mistakes, or the club makes a mistake. We're trying to find ways to remedy a lot of these things. I mean, for example, right at the beginning of the semester, we had a club that submitted a funding request for a competition. They were good to go, all set, right before we were about to purchase the admissions tickets. They withdrew their request for whatever reason.
Really?
And the reason being was that they ended up resubmitting the request because there was an event date change.
Oh.
So they didn't realize that when they withdrew the request that was going to cause a lot of problems. They mm-hmm. resubmitted a new request for like 2 days in advance just because of a date change,
mm-hmm.
Thinking that everything would be fine. And everything was not fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were kind of on code red. We wanted the club to be able to go. We reached out to them. We got it all figured out. I actually submitted like a special funding request on the USG side of things, just mm-hmm. so that they'd be able to go, which was really great. We got a lot of great feedback from them. And that's the thing too, is we're always seeking feedback. You know, I'm always emailing RSOs. Ahmad is always emailing RSOs. Please reach out to us. Let us know what we can do better. You know, in the beginning of the year, I mentioned this before, I think, mm-hmm. Another time that it came on. You know, we're doing funding trainings, reaching out to RSOs and groups of RSOs that may have been underserved in previous years. We want to create an equitable system, and I think we have achieved that this year mm-hmm. to some extent. But there's always work to be done. But we're really excited. We've passed $575,000 in funds
wow.
out of $1 million, which is good because that's a little over half. For fall semester, but we have things in the form right now that are for spring.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of do the math, we've really only allocated about 500 for fall, and mm-hmm. we're prepared to allocate the rest of obviously the 425 for spring. But it's really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited for you guys. I'm gonna do a quick poll around the room. Does anybody else have any questions that they'd like to ask? No? All right. Well, is there anything else you guys would like to share with us about, you know, either the student legal services or tier two funding?
Yeah, well, I think I also just want to take a moment because I think Billy has been so great as our comptroller and being so responsive to all these RSOs. And I think that it's funny because I always see, whenever we get like a contact form or whatever, I always see Billy instantly respond and talk about tier two funding. And he gives the most detailed responses, most detailed answers. And I think that it really helps with, I think, students to know that there's people on the other end and know that there's actual responses that I think that we're trying to take care of them, we're trying to work with them, that I think it really helps the relationship with these RSOs, that there isn't this abrasive relationship, that we're not just ghosting them, we're not responding to them mm-hmm. for year, weeks on time, right? And I think that it makes it a lot easier for us to work with these year twos, right? Because I think something that I've found is that it's really difficult to work with RSOs and have a really good relationship with RSOs that it's not just funding because there's just so many of them and because there's just so much going on from both ends, right? Students
right.
students and the RSOs may not have the time to build a really collaborative relationship with USG, but at the same time, USG has so many different things that it's really difficult for us to facilitate a really collaborative relationship, right? And so something that I think that I was also I think with the funding system that I was hoping we could do a little bit, a little bit different this year was trying to figure out how we can create a more collaborative relationship with students. So it's not just RSOs asking for money. That's the only way they interact with you or she. And so currently we're also trying to figure out how we can talk to them and make sure that, like, when you talk to USG, it's not just because you need funding, but it's because we're here to support you with other resources. We have our organizational support services. They can provide you with free printing. They can provide you with a variety of services, and the locker access and all this stuff. And that it's something that I'm also trying to figure out, because within our 1 year appointments, there's a lot to get done, but always not the most amount of time to do it. Yeah. And so we're currently in the process of trying to juggle everything of how do we make sure that RSOs feel supported, but also how are we able to kind of get everything that we're hoping to do done. And so it's one of those things that I think it's always a give and take. It's always a give and take with all these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess all I have to say is the funding form reopens December 9th for spring semester submissions. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. Comptroller at usg.uconn.edu and funding director at usg.uconn.edu.
Where can tier two organizations find this form? Is it on your website?
It's on our website. We also have other resources on the funding website for, you know, frequently asked questions and whatnot. But it's on the UConn Qali Build page.
Okay.
If you just search in your search engine UConn Qali Build, it's the first link. And then within that website, you just search for the funding request FY26 form.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. We miss having you, and we're so happy to get back onto our biweekly schedule.
Yes.
So, Andy and Billy will be back in just a few weeks. But thank you all so much for tuning in this morning. A special thank you to our news partners, The Daily Campus, UConn Student Newspaper, and UCTV, UConn Student Television Station. A special thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I'm Katie Service.
I'm Ray
Polsky. And I'm Vinny Carbone.
And you have been listening to Husky Nation News on WHUS Stores on 91.7 FM. We will catch you next week, Husky Nation.